have sailed. I have moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
And you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge.
Life begins when somebody's eyes look into your own. Life begins when you get your gal all alone. From morning until twilight, I don't know I'm alive. But I know love begins at 8:45. The stars are gonna twinkle and shine. How they'll shine this evening, about a quarter to nine. My loving arms are gonna tenderly twine around you, around a quarter to nine. I know I won't be late. Call at 8:30. I'm gonna hurry there. I'll be waiting where the lane begins, waiting for you on needles and pins. And then the world is gonna be mine, mine all mine, this evening, about a quarter to nine. Cause at 8:30, I'm gonna hurry there. I'll be waiting where the lane begins, waiting for you on needles and pins. And then the world is gonna be mine, mine all mine, this evening, about a quarter to nine.
This is Bruce Kaplan welcoming you back to another episode of Radio Masterpieces. Hope you're having a fantastic weekend. The first mystery that we have tonight stars Gloria Swanson in a wonderful episode of Suspense. And our second mystery is from the Great Whistler series. If you have any questions for me, please don't hesitate to write to bruce@radiomasterpieces.com. Just have a fantastic weekend, and thank you so much for listening. Now let's enjoy the show.
And now, he brings you Gloria Swanson as star in radio's outstanding theater of thrills,
Suspense. Murder by the Book, or Suspense.
I must have been asleep. At first I thought it was one of those dreams. And then I realized the phone was really ringing. I seemed to remember. It had rung before and I hadn't answered it. But maybe it had been only this once, ringing a long time. Because just as I got there, it stopped. Hello? Hello? I suppose I'd had one of my spells. I never could remember very well just after them. But I know I've been working or trying to. It was my latest, and I thought it would be my best. It was about a woman who killed her husband. But I'd had all kinds of trouble with the end. Everything was all right up until the explanation, how she did it. I knew, of course, but somehow I just couldn't write it. It wouldn't gel. It had been going on like that for some weeks. Then today I must have had another spell. I've been having them ever since the accident. ever since Ned was drowned. They'd begin with headaches. It would get worse and worse, and I'd lie down. And when I'd wake up, I wouldn't remember for a while. Sometimes when I woke up, I wouldn't even be in the same place. Instead of lying on the couch or on my bed, I'd be sitting up in a chair or at my typewriter. Once I even found myself sitting in a car out in the garage. It was a strain of everything, of course. That's why I'd started going to Dr. Winter. And now it seemed as though my poor nerves were fated, one shock after another. Because now, Dr. Winter was dead. You see, he'd been murdered. Yes?
Emily?
Yes?
This is Harry, Harry Bailey. Where have you been?
Why, I've been right here, Harry.
Well, why don't you answer your phone? I've been trying to get you all afternoon.
Oh, I must have been asleep.
Oh. Well, how's the book coming?
Oh, not very well, I'm afraid, Harry.
Still stale.
I guess so. I'm awfully sorry, Harry. I know I promised it to you weeks ago, but...
Oh, forget it. Those things happen. Listen, Emily, I've got a great little proposition for you. It'll make you some money, it'll get your mind off the book for a while, and it'll be worth $1 million worth of publicity for us.
Oh, what's the catch?
Well, I was talking to young Hayes. He practically runs the old man's newspaper chain for him now, you know. And he wants you to cover the Winter case for the whole syndicate.
Oh,
Now, wait a minute before you make any snap judgments. In all the time I've been your publisher, I've never given you a bump steer yet, have I?
But, Harry, I'm not a reporter.
That's just it. You write it from your point of view. The way it looks to the country's foremost woman detective story writer. The clues, the evidence, how it all fits together. Truth is stranger than fiction and so on. You see what I mean?
Well, I don't know. You see, I was a patient of his, Harry.
All right, all the better. Famous man murdered in small resort town. Just so happens famous woman mystery writer lived in same small town. Even was murdered man's patient. Knows everybody by their first names, and so forth and so on. Emily, this will put your name in headlines in every city in the country.
I know, that's the trouble. You see, well, what will Cora say?
Well, why? What's it to Cora?
Well... I'll grant you she may have had a slightly exaggerated idea of his importance, but after all, she was his man Friday for the past year. And now to have her own mother, stepmother anyway, writing it all up in the papers and making capital out of it...
Oh, don't be silly, Emily. Somebody's got to write it. And you'll do it with sympathy and honesty and understanding. What's the greatest thing that could happen as far as getting a fair break in the papers is concerned? And is a chance in a lifetime for you, Emily, no kidding.
Oh, I'd like to. As I say... All right, Harry, I'll do it.
Atta girl. Now listen, I'll have Hayes draw up the contracts right away.
Anything you say, Harry.
Swell. I'll be in touch. Right now.
Good night, Harry.
Hello, Mother.
Hello, darling.
Who was that?
Harry Bailey. He wants me to cover the Winter case for the Hayes Syndicate.
He what?
I told him I would.
Oh, Mother. Oh, Mother, how could you?
Why not, Cora?
Because it's bad enough that he's dead without dragging it through the papers all over again.
But it will be in the papers anyway, darling. And as Harry says, at least I can give it sympathy and understanding.
Sympathy and understanding.
Why, Cora.
Please, Mother, please don't do it. Stay out of it. We'll only get more heartaches out of it, that's all.
Why, Cora? Why, you almost sound as though you were afraid. Are you afraid of anything?
Afraid? All right, then, maybe I am. Maybe that's just what I am. Afraid.
I had never really understood Cora. She was Ned's child, not mine. I was only her stepmother. Not that we weren't the best of friends, but she'd always been a little strange. More like her mother, I imagine. And then the shock of losing Ned, and this on top of it. There were times when she seemed almost in a daze. It was hard to blame her. The next day, Harry phoned to say the contracts were all in order and I was to report to a Lieutenant Hahn of the Homicide Bureau who would permit me to interview the girl they were holding for the murder and, in general, act as my guide, philosopher, and friend. But upon appearing at his office, I found a gentleman with his hat on his head and his feet on his desk who didn't bother to remove either and merely stared at me.
Something?
I'm Emily Carlyle. I was told to report to you. You're Lieutenant Hahn?
Uh-huh.
I was told that you would sort of show me the ropes.
Mm-hmm.
I deduce from your attitude that you are not particularly pleased by the prospect.
I cannot tell a lie. You deduce right.
Well, isn't this nice? We're not going to get along.
Oh, I wouldn't say that, Miss Carlyle, or is it Mrs.?
Miss, my married name is Wales. I was married to Ned Wales, you know.
Ah.
Suppose we clear the air a little, Lieutenant. I take it the barrier between us is the old one of professional versus amateur, dealer in fact versus dealer in fiction, and you disapprove of fiction?
No, I got nothing against detective stories or detective story writers. I even read them myself once in a while. For laughs.
Well, that is encouraging.
What?
To find that you can not only read, but laugh.
Okay.
Then, just what is the difficulty, Lieutenant?
I don't like to see people tried in the newspapers.
I have no intention of trying this girl. What's her name?
Claire Ogilvie.
I have no intention of trying her. All I want to do is present the facts. Tell the story.
Well, I guess you want to see her, don't you?
Among other things, yes. Unless, of course, you have something better to do.
Oh, no, no. You're my assignment from now on. I'm in the doghouse.
Well, I can think of less appropriate places.
Okay.
Why?
This is a big case. National sensation, special prosecutors, hullabaloo in the papers, special feature writers like you.
Yes?
And I'm in a minority of one around here, so nobody likes me.
Stop being cryptic, Lieutenant. What are you driving at?
They got a big thing on their hands and they want a conviction. I don't agree.
About what?
About the girl. You see, I think she's innocent.
That was interesting. The girl was even more interesting. She was about 25, a pretty girl, and she was lying on her bunk in the cell, staring up at the one dim light in the ceiling. She didn't even look around when I came in.
This is Miss Emily Carlyle, the writer, Claire. She wants to talk to you. I'll be back after a while, Miss Carlyle.
Go away. Leave me alone.
I can't, Clara. I have a job to do.
That makes you different, I suppose.
No, but I still have a job to do.
That's what they all say. They've got a job to do. On me.
Who's trying to do a job on you, Claire?
A lot of smart people who make their living at it, like you.
You mean that they're trying to say that you killed him and you didn't?
I loved him, you fool. Why would I kill him? Why would I kill him?
Why did you confess to killing him?
He was dead, wasn't he? What difference did it make? That's what they wanted me to say, so what difference did it make?
Then you didn't kill him.
All right. I killed him. That's what you want me to say, too. All right, I killed him.
I don't want you to say anything, dear. I just want to know what happened.
He was killed. Murdered. That's what happened.
They say you quarreled with him.
I dug my nails into him. I wanted to hurt him. There was blood on my dress, and so I burned it, and they found that. Then when I heard what had happened, I ran away, and they found me. Oh, they've got everything fixed just fine. I had a job to do, that's all, and they did it. And the sooner they get it over with, the better, and then everybody will be happy. Maybe even me.
Why did you quarrel with him?
Have you ever been in love with some man, and then one fine day you found out you were just the last of a long list of other women? Have you? Have you?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I have.
Well, then you know why I quarreled with him.
Yes.
All right, then, and I'll tell you something else, too. I didn't kill him, but now I wish I had. Do you hear me? I wish I had!
Well, I suppose she told you she killed him and you believed it.
First she said she had killed him, and then she said she hadn't.
You didn't answer the second part.
She indicated you have certain evidence.
Okay. Come in here. The DA's got the original sample, but pictures should give you a rough idea.
Oh, what's that?
Piece of a dress that was found under the bed. They matched it to the dress she burned, oh, more or less.
What's that plaster thing?
Cast of tire marks. Did you read Dick Tracy?
Oh, I've used plaster casts of tire marks myself in my books. But, you know, they look a little vague.
They are.
You know something, Lieutenant? I'm inclined to agree with you.
About what?
About the girl. I think she is innocent.
Oh, So you can write it from the whodunit angle, huh?
Bless his parody, Lieutenant, if you please, and a little more attention to detail. By the way, why is everyone so anxious to believe this particular girl did it?
Because they think they can make it stick. Why look further? Because it's good for them. They make their reputations that way, just like your boss makes circulation.
Let's face it. You and I know that what Dr. Winter was like. There must be a dozen girls in this town who have just as much reason for killing him as this one.
What I said.
As for the confession, she's obviously an hysteric. Any good alienist could break that down.
Oh, said that too.
And as for this stuff, I don't know much about tires, but this dress pattern is as common as a cotton handkerchief. There must be 50 of them within a mile of where we're standing right now.
Same goes for the tires. I've told them all that.
Then there must be something wrong with your methods, Lieutenant. Now, what do we deduce from all this?
I'll tell you what I deduce.
What?
There's a woman who's killed a man in this town. A murderess. A murderess that's still on the loose.
At first, I was quite excited about the whole thing. About covering a murder case, I mean. It was good for me. It took my mind off myself, the book I should have been finishing and couldn't. And poor Ned being drowned last summer. That had been more of a strain than even I realized. I knew that now. Not that I wasn't terribly fond of Ned, but we hadn't been as close as we once were. But it had been a shock. That's why I'd been going to Dr. Winter myself. He'd as much as told me that the spells I had were a direct result of what happened to Ned. Oh, it shows you how tiny and yet how strange our little world can be here. Here I was, writing up the case of Dr. Winter's murder for the newspapers. Of course, right away I discovered that the evidence against the girl they were holding was all circumstantial, and Lieutenant Hahn got me prints of the pictures, a piece from the dress they said she was wearing, and the tire marks. And I went out to do a little checking of my own. First, I went to Gorman's department store. Actually, it's the only real store for women's things in town.
Well, Miss Carlyle, long time no see, eh? What can I do for you?
I was wondering if you could identify a dress for me. A certain dress.
A dress? Why, sure. What kind of a dress you have in mind?
No, I don't want to buy one. I just want to find out about one. A particular dress. This dress. That this picture was taken of. That's only a piece of it, of course.
Oh, that?
Yes, you've sold quite a few of them, haven't you?
Say, I hear you're going to write up this winter case for the papers. Is that right, Miss Carlyle?
Why, yes, I am. As a matter of fact, this dress...
I know this dress, all right. We had them last spring, sold like hotcakes, 4 dozen of them.
Did you keep any record of who you sold them to? Could I get a list?
No. No complete record. Mostly cash sales, you know. Made up a partial list, that's all, a partial list.
Well, that's what I want. That's better than nothing.
Going into competition with the police department now, huh?
No, I'm trying to help them, Mr. Gorman. If you'll give me...
You better see them about that yourself, then. Lieutenant Hahn. Gave him the list 3 weeks ago. You better see him.
Oh, I didn't know he had one. He never told me.
The cops don't always tell everything they know, eh? You go see Lieutenant Hahn. He's the man you want to see, Lieutenant Hahn.
I felt a little silly. Why hadn't he told me? But then, of course, I had never asked him. My next stop was Morton's Big Service Station on the corner of North and Main. They did practically all the tire business in town.
How do, Miss Carlyle? Fill it up?
Why, yes, I guess so. Oh, but I wanted to ask you something.
Sure, Miss Carlyle. What is it?
Well, you see this thing?
Hmm?
It's the imprint of an auto tire, and I wonder...
Oh, from the winter case, huh? The cops was already in here. I heard you was working on the case, Miss Carlyle.
In a way. And I was trying to find out about this tire, I mean...
Well, that tire, ma'am, that's a 616 Goodstone. It's pretty new, too. You can see from this middle tread here, you see. I don't see how anybody could prove much by this here.
Do you sell many of these? What did you call them?
616 Goodstone. Oh, yeah, plenty. That's what I mean. I don't see how you could prove much with that there tire. You find them on all kind of cars.
I know, but...
Look here, you got them on your own car, Miss Carlyle. Same kind, 616 Goodstone. Almost new, too. You see what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I see.
Yeah, plenty of them kind of tires around. Hey, you want that tank of gas now, Miss Carlyle?
No. No, thank you. Never funny how you never notice things like tires, if you're a woman anyway. They did always handle things like that, and then afterwards Cora had done it. Cora. And of course, as the boy had said, there were hundreds of tires like it. Hundreds. Cora wasn't home yet, and I wandered around the house and tried to think, but I didn't get very far. I was afraid one of my headaches was coming on. I decided to try and write my first article. But when I sat down at the typewriter, I remembered I hadn't put the cover over it the last time, and it was all dusty. I went to the broom closet and rummaged around in the basket we keep there for old rags. I just started to dust off the typewriter when I noticed it. The rag I held in my hand. It wasn't just an ordinary rag. It was a piece of a dress. And it wasn't just an ordinary dress. It had a cute little red and white print pattern. The kind of a dress, the police said, was worn by the woman who had murdered Dr. Winter. It was then I heard Cora coming in. Instinctively, I thrust the rag that was in my hand into the desk.
Mother, you home?
Oh, hello, darling. Been shopping?
Oh, just a few odds and ends. What have you been doing?
Oh, a little of this, a little of that.
Mm.
Cora, what about the car? Won't we be needing new tires pretty soon?
Well, no, I had new ones put on all around only a little while ago, you remember.
I'd forgotten. When was that?
Oh, 6 weeks ago, anyway.
Then it was before?
Before what?
The murder.
Will you stop it? Do you have to go through with this thing, Mother?
I think it's better for me to write it than some stranger, don't you?
If you wish.
But it's so different from what happens in stories. For instance, I can't even remember what we were doing the night it happened. Can you?
We were home.
Are you sure?
Don't you remember?
Isn't it silly?
You had one of your headaches. I was in my room. You were in yours.
Then I was asleep all evening.
I suppose you were.
But you don't know. You weren't with me. What a pity.
I'll start supper.
Oh, Cora.
Yes?
Whatever happened to that old print dress? It was yours, I think.
What print dress?
You know, with a red and white flowered print. You did have one like that, didn't you?
I haven't seen it for quite a while.
But it couldn't have just disappeared.
The last time I saw it, you had it, and then I don't know what happened to it.
I had it?
Don't you remember?
No. Would this be it, Cora?
Oh. So this has all been a cross-examination, has it?
There were certain things I had to know, Cora.
Well, I won't stand for it, you hear? You can do anything you like about yourself, but I won't let you drag me into it. I won't.
You were in love with him, too, weren't you, Cora?
Yes. Yes, now are you satisfied? Yes, I was in love with him. I was in love with him.
When I woke up, the sun was shining, and I was lying on the bed in Cora's room, and Cora was gone. I made some coffee, and then I went down to see Lieutenant Hahn.
What's the matter, Miss Carlisle? You look sort of played out.
I had rather a restless night. I've been thinking about this thing, Lieutenant. I've been thinking about it a lot.
Been doing a little checking up, I hear.
Yes, Lieutenant. Why didn't you tell me you had that list about the dresses? Was it, because you knew that someone in my house had bought one of those dresses?
You're speaking of your stepdaughter, Cora Wales.
Yes.
We did know it, of course, but we knew the same thing about a couple of dozen other women. It didn't make much difference.
Oh.
Got any new ideas?
Look, Lieutenant, I've been writing a new book, or trying to, about a murder. A woman who kills her husband. I didn't know how to finish it. Now, look, it's all sort of mixed up in my mind, but you know the old theory about a murderer will always return to the scene of the crime?
I don't get it.
I know. Put it this way. If someone killed because the person they killed knew something, they'd have to kill anyone else who knew that same thing now, wouldn't they?
You still going on the theory the Ogilvy girl's innocent?
I know she's innocent.
You know? That's pretty strong talk, Miss Carlisle.
Well, call it woman's intuition. Call it whatever you like. I just know that there's someone...
Look, Miss Carlisle. Yeah, I had you wrong yesterday. I can see you're not kidding about this thing. Not that I pretend to know what you're talking about, but if you've really got something, you better tell Papa.
No, no. I can't.
You say you think somebody's going to come back to the scene of the crime.
I don't know. I don't know what I think. I just know that,
Look, Miss Carlisle, I don't like it. You're upset and you're frightened.
No.
I want to help you.
No, no. I have to do this my own way.
Do what?
I don't know.
Well, I can't very well use a rubber hose to get it out of you. But I just want you to remember that whatever I do, it's part of my job.
What? What's part of your job?
To see that nobody else gets killed around here. Including you.
I could feel the headache coming on as I left his office. I almost ran to my car. All I could think of was that I had to get home before it happened. But it was coming over me awfully fast, faster than it ever had before. The house was empty. I threw myself on the couch and pressed my hands over my eyes. The pain was horrible, horrible. And then suddenly I had the feeling that I wasn't alone, that someone was standing there, standing over me. Someone I couldn't see. Someone who was crushing my brain, squeezing my temples in a kind of terrible, invisible vice. Someone who was trying to kill me. I was having a dream. Another of those horrible dreams. I was dreaming that I'd gone upstairs to Cora's room and she was there packing her things. She didn't see me or hear me, and I crept into the room very softly. It seemed as though I had a heavy poker or something in my hand. I crept up very softly behind her. I raised the poker, and then she whirled around. She saw me. You knew it wasn't an accident, didn't you? You knew he didn't just drown. You knew I killed your father. I pushed him. And when I went to Dr. Winter, he found out, too. Something buried in my subconscious, he said. And he made me tell him. He told you all that, didn't he? So now I'm going to have to kill you, too, Cora. I'm going to have to kill you!
All right, Miss Carlisle, all right. You better come along now.
I hear the doctors keep talking about schizophrenia. That's a double personality, you know. They seem to think I did all those things without even knowing it. Drowning Ned. Trying to kill Cora. That's what the spells were, they say. The other personality, like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. But I wish I could talk to Dr. Winter. I went to him first about the spells. He said he could cure me if I told him the truth. Only, of course, I can't talk to him now. He's dead. I killed him.
Valley 103.1 FM.
And now the Whistler's strange story, Brotherly Hate. Visiting hours were over. The Jeffrey Long Museum in San Francisco was quiet. And in the private office of the owner, Jeffrey sat at his desk, staring at the note in his hand. A note that was damp, almost wet with his own perspiration. The hands trembled and there was a tight, nervous feeling in the pit of his stomach. Symptoms of terror. It had all started 3 months ago when Jeffrey Long had received the first envelope while in Cairo. Then followed days and weeks of mounting fear. Because each Saturday thereafter, like a gentle stabbing before the final thrust, came an identical note, and the message was always the same.
If you kill Stell, you will die on the anniversary of her death.
And now it's Saturday again. The feeling of terror grows stronger, doesn't it, Jesper? The beads of perspiration on your forehead colder. Yes, because it's Saturday and tomorrow, Sunday the 17th,
is the anniversary of Estelle's death.
Yes?
Mrs. Merton is here.
Thank you, Miss Trent. Send him in. Come in, Burton. Come in.
What's on your mind, Long?
You know why I called you. Sit down.
When did you discover the lamp used by Rameses IV? Oh, what I do for money.
You're a private detective, aren't you? What about Estelle Blair's brother?
Look, if you didn't kill the girl, why worry?
But this brother, the one who's been sending me these letters, he's obviously a crackpot. He might do anything.
Call the police. They'll give you protection.
I tell you, he's got to be found. You've got to find him. Can't go around afraid of everyone I meet. Everyone from cab drivers to the caretakers here in my own building.
Listen. When I walked in here nearly a year ago with a hunk of a pirate and an alabaster cup that belonged to King Tut, you hired me like that.
Certainly.
Since then, I've been doing your dirty work. I've even swiped scarabs and jewel boxes for you all over the world. But murder's another thing, even for me. I want to know what I'm getting into, that's all. If you kill Estelle Blair, then I want to know about that. Clear?
I told you. The death was an accident.
And I'm telling you the result of my investigation. As far as I'm concerned, Estelle Blair never had a brother. Anytime you decide to give out with what really got you scared, just dial my number.
You can't walk out on me now, Burton.
You can get another private eye.
No, there isn't time.
Like I said, when you're ready to tell me why you're so scared, just dial my number. But don't wait too long.
It turned out as you feared it would, hasn't it, Jeff? Yes. Burton, the private detective, hasn't been able to find Estelle Blair's brother. And now there's only one thing to do. You know there's too much to lose if you are murdered. The resulting investigation would certainly reveal the ugly facts surrounding your former assistant's death. You have immortality to lose, Jeff. Your name is the greatest private collector of Egyptology in the world. The proud name that shines brightly from the brass plaque on your great museum. The museum you intend to will to the city on your deck. Quickly, you get to your feet. Hurry to the small cabinet and take down a bottle marked poison. There is a way out, isn't there? A way you can preserve the honored name of Geoffrey Long.
Excuse me, Mr. Long. Yes? Oh, what is it, Miss Frank?
You won't be needing me anymore this evening, sir. I thought I'd run along.
No, I won't be needing you, Miss Grant. No. On second thought, perhaps you'd better stay a few minutes. There is something you can do.
Yes, sir?
I'll call you.
As you walk back to your desk, you unscrew the cap on the bottle of poison. A Herculean force drags at your arm as you try to lift the bottle to your lips. Finally, you succeed. Your throat is numb as you take one swallow, then another, and another. Then a sudden stiffness seizes your hand. The bottle slips through your fingers. Slowly, you walk around the desk, slump into the chair. You wait a minute or so and then press the button.
Come in, Miss Grant.
Mr. Long, is something the matter?
Yes, I made a terrible mistake. In the cabinet, two bottles almost identical. One contains cough medicine. The other, deadly poison.
Mr. Long, you didn't really take
it. Listen to me carefully, please. It was a mistake, do you understand? Be sure they know. They mustn't think otherwise. It wasn't suicide. Remember that. It wasn't suicide.
You're not going to die.
What?
I was afraid you'd do something like this. I poured the poison down the sink yesterday afternoon. What you drank is just colored water.
When you raised the bottle of poison to your lips, you thought it was the only way out, didn't you, Jeffrey? You would cheat Estelle Blair's brother, the man who had sworn to kill you, if you took your own life and make it appear as an accident, and you would preserve the honored name of Geoffrey Long. Then as you sat at your desk waiting for death, your secretary, Bernice Grant, informed you that you wouldn't die because she'd poured the poison out of the bottle the day before, replaced the deadly contents with harmless colored water.
I was afraid you'd try to kill yourself. You see, I've known about the letter.
You knew all along?
Yes. I've seen you see the worry in your eyes, the torture. But I couldn't let you do it.
I'll do it again. You or no one else can stop me.
No, no, you mustn't.
Please.
I can help you.
Please leave me alone.
Promise me you won't try.
Leave me alone, Bernice, please.
I want to help
you. I said.
You must find a Felbier's brother. You can talk to him. Tell him it was an accident.
Yes. Yes, I could tell him how she slipped. Fell off the boat. I could show him I wasn't to blame.
I'm sure I could find him. I know if you'll trust me.
No, it's impossible.
What if I told you I'd already located a Felbier's body?
What?
Yes. I learned about him the other day. He's living in the old men's home in Santa Clara. I know if I can talk to him. Let me try.
Well,
you promised us to try to keep him alive.
Sure you're not making all this up,
just... I tell you, I know I can find a Felbier. Promise me.
All right.
Then go to the King's hat room in the basement. There's a telephone there and a couch. Stay there until I call you. I'll bring you some food. Will you go?
Yes. If you say so.
And please, no matter what happens, you must trust me. You see, I love you, Jason.
Still numb with shock, you find your way down to the King's hut room, the large storage room filled with relics from the Valley of the Kings in Egypt. Without even taking off your tie, you lie down on the couch and drop into a deep sleep. You awake much later, and when you look at your watch, you see that it's Sunday morning, the morning of the day you expect to be killed. Your thoughts fasten on the tiny bit of hope Bernice gave you yesterday. You quickly reach for the phone.
Good morning, Messiah apartment.
Miss Grant, please.
Thank you. Hello?
Bernice, this is Geoffrey. Have you found anything more about Estelle's brother?
Not yet, but Geoffrey, I've made progress. I definitely know she had a brother. He's somewhere in San Francisco.
But today is the anniversary of Estelle's death. The day it's going to happen. I can't just wait.
But you must be patient, Geoffrey. At any moment, I may hear from you.
What about the father in Santa Peralta?
Trust me, Geoffrey.
I know, but what did he say? What's the brother's name?
I don't know yet.
But the father, didn't he tell you?
I'm working as fast as I can, Geoffrey. You must believe that. I'll call you later, this afternoon. Maybe I'll have some very good news. Just wait and be patient, will you? Don't go out.
All right.
Remember this. Carlo?
I will. I guess I should have known it long ago.
She convinces you to wait, doesn't she, Geoffrey? And you sit there quietly in the near darkness, trying to fight down your desire to run away and leave town. You're debating this when you hear footsteps in the direction of the stairs outside. You tense, nervously, staring at the door. Someone is coming, Geoffrey, into this room. Someone who moves quietly and has a key. You want to run, but the door is the only way, and then...
Good morning, Mr. Long.
Brothers, what are you doing here?
Why, Grady, the regular caretaker, is on his vacation, sir. I'm relieving him this week.
But this is Sunday. You're not supposed to be here on Sunday.
Miss Grant instructed me that you were here, sir, doing some special work. She asked me to bring this breakfast tray.
Oh, yes, of course, I didn't see it. Sorry, Claude.
It's all right, sir. Anything else?
No, nothing else. Thanks.
You watch him leave, stare at the food, suddenly realize you're unable to eat it or to even think of hunger. Your nerves are getting the best of you, aren't they, Jeffrey? And you decide to take a chance and drive to Santa Peralta yourself at once. Talk to Estelle's father. You're sure you can make it and be back before Bernice calls you. You're on the highway in 5 minutes, headed south. An odd feeling tells you that a car somewhere behind you has been making the very same turns and that it picked you up near the museum. You try to put it out of your mind when no attempt is made to catch up with you. Hours later, you pull up before an ancient stucco building bearing the sign, Santa Peralta Home for the Ages.
Well, so visitors so early. Welcome.
Oh, thanks.
Welcome.
I'm looking for a man by the name of Blair.
I'm sorry, Mr.
Long. Jeffrey Long.
I'm sorry, Mr. Long. No one here by that name.
Well, maybe he's here under another name. He had a daughter named Estelle.
No one here with a daughter named Estelle.
A pretty girl, blonde. Tragically killed about 2 years ago at sea, the Mediterranean. She fell overboard.
Oh, pity. Yes. But I'm afraid you have the wrong place. We have only 10 gentlemen here, and I know their records very well. We've never had your Mr. Blair here in San Peralta.
You're sure?
Absolutely, Mr. Long.
Something has gone wrong, hasn't it, Jeff? Bernice told you Estelle's father was in the old men's home at Santa Peralta, but apparently she was lying. Suddenly you look around you, find that you're driving through the Marina District. Not far from a little cottage Estelle used to share with her mother in the days when Estelle was your assistant at the museum. You turn left, then right, and you see the house. Hardly recognize it after all these years. You stop and get out of the car and walk toward a tall woman who is watering the lawn next door.
Hello. It's a lovely day, isn't it?
You like them hot, this is going to be a scorcher.
You live here long?
9 to 15 years. You're not a collector, are you?
Oh, no. No, I'm neither a bill collector nor a processor. An old friend of mine used to live next door.
Andrews, maybe?
No. The name was Blair.
Oh, then. Mother, big woman. Arms like the posts on that porch.
Well, the girl, Estelle, was my friend.
Sweet little thing. Blonde as corn silk. She was killed, you know. Fell off a boat somewhere near Europe or Asia or somewhere like that. Worked for a museum.
Well, I've been trying to locate her brother.
Brother? I don't seem to remember any man in the Blair family. Seems like it was just Estelle and her mother.
Oh, I see. Well, I got to be going.
There was a girl, though, used to live with the Blairs, a friend of Estelle's. Dark girl, slim, about 5'2", trim little thing. Wore hair in a bun. You know, I used to say to my husband, Mac, that dark girl looks more like Mrs. Blair than Estelle does. I bet you they're sisters. I used to say to my husband,
Wait a minute.
Mac.
Be quiet.
What?
The car. He went past me. Now it's turning around on the street.
Oh, no, Loggins. What is it? What's the matter?
In your car, driving fast, you begin to pull away from the car and back again. Soon lose sight of it altogether. Slowing down, your mind stops racing too. And then it hits you, Jeffrey. Something that woman back there said.
Dark girl, slim, about 5'2". Trim little thing, wore hair in a bun. You know, I used to say to my husband, Mac, that dark girl looks more like Mrs. Blair than Estelle does. I bet you they're sisters.
Sisters. Of course.
Yes, Jeffrey, that's it. an exact description of Bernice, your own secretary. Suddenly it all becomes very clear to you, doesn't it? You noticed it the first day she came to work for you. There was something familiar about her. She reminded you of someone, but you were never able to figure out who she was in. And now you know. You've been a fool, haven't you, Jester? The way you've played into her hands. You're certain Bernice is Estelle's sister. And all the while, she's the one who's been sending the notes, intending to avenge her sister, Estelle. Back at the museum, you see no sign of the other car. But you're no longer worried about it, are you, Jeff? You're certain now that Bernice is your would-be assassin. You hurry inside and wait for her call. The hours drag by. And then...
Hello?
Jeffrey Dunn. I'm calling from a payphone in a drugstore in Brooklyn. Tell me what. You won't ask me what. Do as I say.
All right.
I found the brother. He's going to try to kill his friend. But he doesn't know where you are.
But you...
Be sure you keep all the lights out there in the...
Oh, yes, of course.
And don't call him. Don't tell anyone where you are.
No, of course.
Meet you there in half an hour. Don't call anyone.
Yes, I'm...
Goodbye. Done.
She's clever, isn't she, Jester? She's maneuvered you on the very anniversary of Estelle's death into the basement of the museum where no one can hear a sound through the thick walls. But it's over for her now, isn't it? All over.
Burton Detective Agency, Burton speaking.
This is Jeffrey Long, Burton.
Oh? What now?
I know. I know who's been sending me those notes.
Yeah?
My secretary all along. Bernice Grant.
What?
Yes. She's Estelle's sister. Now, you've got to help me.
Look here, Law. I've told you where I stand. Before I do anything, I have to know.
Are you prepared to go along with me? The whole way? If I tell you?
What do you mean by that?
I mean, even the doing away with something?
You mean, Bernice?
Yes. If it's necessary.
Anything for money. You know that.
All right. I still pushed her overboard. But she had it coming. I'll tell you about it later. Are you with me now?
Of course. I'll be right over.
You better bring along a man you can trust. Bernice is coming here to the King Cut Room in the basement in half an hour. She'll probably have a gun. Can I depend on you?
Don't worry about a thing. We'll meet you there.
It seems ages as you sit there in the dark waiting. Then when the illuminated hands on your watch point to 8:30, you hear Bernice come.
I'm here.
Oh, I've been so worried. See, let's turn on the light. Oh, I'm too tired, darling. I've been so worried.
Isn't this scary? I think a little too far, Bernice.
Jeffrey, what do you mean?
How stupid do you think I am?
Jeffrey, what's this all about?
Still playing the game. Didn't you think I'd see through it all? You know Bernice, I visited San Barbara. And as you know, Estelle's father has never been there.
I had to tell you something to keep you from doing away with yourself. Was all I could think of. Jeffrey, I've been working every minute, working for you. I asked you to trust me.
Trust you? You had me so worked up, I suspected everybody I ran into. Even thought it might be Carruthers, the caretaker. And in the car, I imagined someone was following.
You didn't imagine it. You were being followed.
What?
I was afraid you might go out. I called in the police, begged them to put a man on
you. And you expect me to believe that? Give me that first.
Jeffrey!
So, you're carrying a gun. For what?
Jeffrey, it's for your protection. I was afraid he might find you here. Why are you pointing that gun at me?
You see, Bernice, I know all about you. Found out from a woman next door to your old house in Marina.
I know you were the one who wrote me those notes.
No!
I know Estelle never had a brother. I've discovered something even more interesting.
But it...
I've discovered that you, Bernice, the sweet secretary who said she loved me, you're the one who intends to kill me. Because you're Estelle's sister. And that's why I'm going to kill you.
You watch Bernice standing against the wall, weeping. Everything is under control now, isn't it, sir? You're certain that you've outsmarted the girl you think is Estelle's sister. The girl you think wanted to kill you in vengeance for her sister's death. Now there's only one thing on your mind. To get out of the museum with Bernice and do away with. You're tense, listening for the approaching footsteps which you know will be personal.
Thank heavens. He's coming. The detective I've had following you.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Bernice. You're wrong. That's someone I sent.
Told you not to call anyone.
I know you did. You wanted me all to yourself, didn't you?
You're out of your mind.
Ah, you in there?
Yes, in here, Burton.
Burton. Dick Burton?
Yes.
Come on out, Long.
Shall I bring Bernice?
No. Leave her there a while. Come on out alone.
Don't go, Jesse. I found out for sure
it's
this morning.
It's no use, Bernice. I fell for your lies for a long time.
Wait, please! Jeffrey, don't go! The police will be here soon! Dick Burton is a Estelle's brother!
Her brother!
Just a simple little ditty in a good old Irish way, and I'd give the world if she could sing that song to me. That's an Irish lullaby. Oft in dreams I wander to that again, I feel her arms a-hugging me as when she held me then, and I hear her voice a-humming as in days of yore, when she used to rock me fast asleep,
outside the cabin door.
And ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
And you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge. The door is slowly closing for Radio Masterpieces, but be sure and tune in again next week from 9 to 10 p.m. to listen to more wonderful mysteries from the 1940s and 50s. This is Bruce Kaplan signing off. Radio Masterpieces is a Seattle Miracle Incorporated production.